Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
Welcome to today's episode of Relatable Finance. So once again, the idea for today's episode came from television, and I was recently watching Friends, and in this episode, a salesman was trying to sell Joey encyclopedias. And the salesman asked Joey if he's ever in a situation where all your friends are having a conversation and you just nod along, not really sure what they're talking about. And it goes to Joey picturing all these different situations where he doesn't know what they're talking about and just nodding and smiling. And it got me thinking that this actually happens a lot in my life, and I'm probably in a lot of people's life, where people are talking about things you don't understand, but you just pretend like you do. You don't want to be the dumb one. And I thought it would be a good topic to talk about some financial topics that maybe you think you know about or pretend to know about, but just give you a little more information on some of those.
Yeah, so I feel like I've been faced with this scenario multiple times here recently where someone's talking about something and I really don't know what they're talking about or not really that informed. And I feel like I'm faced with a decision. Do I pull a Joey and just kind of nod along, or do I ask some more questions? And I'm going to be locked into like a 30-minute conversation. So I'm doing like the cost-benefit analysis in my head. And sometimes I do, but at the same time, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, Jay. No, it's definitely happened to me plenty of times as well. So we're just going to cover three general areas today to hopefully decrease the amount of times that this happens to you, so you actually know what they're talking about rather than just nodding along. So three areas. We're going to talk about some market lingo. We're going to talk about mortgages, and then we're going to uncover the mystery behind credit scores. So all, I think, good topics where people probably don't know as much as they maybe think or pretend to know.
Yeah, some great topics. So let's start with market lingo. First up, what in the heck do they mean when they're talking about rate cuts or hikes?
So definitely something that hopefully people are hearing a lot about recently and really over the past handful of years. And we've had separate podcasts on the Fed and interest rates, but when they talk about rate cuts, for example, what they're really referring to is the Federal Reserve cutting the federal funds rate. So this is a very specific rate that is used by banks to lend to other banks overnight. So not something we'll probably have to deal with in our lives, but this rate is meaningful because it really touches all other rates. So although we're not going to deal with it, when they cut rates, it'll likely affect everything we actually deal with. So savings rates, mortgages, student loan rates, all those different types of things. So it is something that really matters.
Yeah, so as Shane mentioned, it is a really, really important thing. It has profound implications throughout the financial markets. And really, between September 2007 through December of 2008, the Fed cut interest rates a total of 5.25%. They were at zero for some time, and then they've been raising them here recently. They raised them four times last year, and at the moment, they're considering, or markets are expecting, the Fed to cut rates over the next 12 months. So this is a really profound data. I know that you hear it a lot, cut and hike, and not really, you may not necessarily know what it applies to or what the implications are, but usually if the economy is doing really well, it means that they're likely to hike rates, which is intended to help reduce growth. And then if the economy is not doing well, they're likely to cut rates. And so that's where that may lead to.
Yeah, so definitely something that is heard a lot in the news, read about it. And now hopefully you have a little bit more information. So another commonly used phrase, which I just heard you say already, Joe, is talking about the markets. So you hear on the news that the market was up today, or the market's been really hot so far this year. And in a lot of cases, people probably just nod their head and say, yep, nope, that market's been doing great. But what does the market actually mean?
Yeah, so you may hear things like the Dow or Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P or the NASDAQ, and what in the world do those mean? And really what they're all intended to do is provide a simple measure to allow everyone to gauge how the market is doing over a certain time period, whether it be a day, a month, or year-to-date, etc. So let's first start with the Dow, or Dow Jones Industrial Averages, which is its full name. It comprises of the 30th largest companies. It was established in 1885, and it's meant to provide a broad measure of market performance. If we fast forward to the S&P 500, which was first introduced in 1923, it tracked a smaller subset of stocks, but eventually expanded to 500, which it still tracks today. The S&P 500 is a superior and broader measure of the stock market, as it covers a broader range of industries and sectors, and it has 500 a lot more individual companies. So it's considered a better gauge overall than the Dow, given how broad it is. And then finally, the NASDAQ was actually established in 1971 and was the first electronic stock market. NASDAQ is an acronym for National Association of Security Dealer Automated Quotation. That's a serious tongue twister. But the NASDAQ is also used as a way to gauge market direction, but it's generally more technology-driven than the other indexes.
So one thing that all three of those have in common is they're all U.S. markets. So whenever you hear about those, you can generally get an idea of what the U.S. markets did. Sometimes they refer to international markets that are important, but they have similar indexes, such as the S&P and the Dow. So just a couple of those, not that everybody will remember them, but the FTSE is the name for the UK index, the Nikkei is Japan, and the Hang Seng is in Hong Kong. Definitely probably not things you'll remember, but there are international markets as well for all of these.
Absolutely. These are meant to be ways to track market activity and provide a general gauge. Next, let's go into what market cycles may mean and whether, so sometimes you often hear late cycle or early cycle. What does that mean? And so that's important because the economy does not, as we all know, go in a straight line. It tends to ebb and flow, and it has what we are referred to as a market cycle. So today, given that we are in the longest economic expansion in history, we would be considered in late cycle. So why is that important, or why is it important that we pay attention to any stage of the economic cycle? It's because certain asset classes tend to perform better or worse at different stages of the economic cycle. So given that we're late cycle, areas like energy, healthcare, industrials, materials, those tend to perform better. If you're in the earlier stages of the economic cycle, things like financials, technology, those have tended to do a little bit better in earlier stages. It's not necessarily always a tried and true measure, but nonetheless, it's meant to give you an idea of where we are in the market conditions to help you understand what may do best.
Yeah, and if there's one thing that we look at historically is the market, the economy does run through these cycles. And there's early cycle, mid cycle, end cycle. And no matter how long the recovery is going or the cycle is going, it will come to an end at some time. So that's what we're referring to by late cycle. And it really does matter for a lot of the things that we do when we look at our portfolios, deciding what moves to make, how to position them, knowing that we're late cycle is a big thing that we look at. And I know going into kind of the last topic on market lingo, one worry of being in late cycle is that the cycle is going to end, we're going to go to a recession, and what that ultimately will mean for the markets. And one of the topics I know we're going to discuss is what a bear market is.
There are many different phrases that you may hear in regards to market conditions, bull markets and bear markets. Let's start with bull markets, since those tend to be the more optimistic term to use. But nonetheless, there is no gauge or specific metric that says we're in a bull market. But generally speaking, it is a general rise in prices. So if you have an asset class, let's say that stocks are up 5 or 10% or even 20% over a specific time period, a general rise is referred to as a bull market. On the opposite side, we have a couple of different phrases to consider. We have a pullback, and this is a temporary retreat in prices. This is usually somewhere in the range from 0 to 10%. Beyond that, you have what is considered a correction. A correction is a decline between -10 and -20%. These tend to happen quite frequently and are hard to predict. And lastly, there are bear markets, and these are declines that are greater than -20%. And these are of high importance because those tend to be associated with recessions. They tend to last longer or tend to take longer to recover from and are often associated with recessions, which is why a lot of attention is paid to the economic cycle and why we try to avoid the recession and become more defensive before that happens.
Yeah, so I think once again, some market lingo that's out there, and hopefully you have a slightly better idea of what those actually mean. Now on to mortgages. So mortgages we thought was a pretty good topic because so many people use them. In a lot of cases, they can be a very good way of using debt, although not always the case, as we clearly saw prior to the financial crisis, mortgages probably not being used in the correct way. But basically, mortgages are ways for consumers to borrow money from a bank to pay for a house, and the house is collateral for the loan. So if you stop making the payments to the bank, they're ultimately going to take away your home. But it's a very common thing, but we maybe don't think everybody truly understands what they are.
Yeah, so there are different types of mortgages. The most common mortgage would be a 30-year fixed mortgage. There's also a 15-year. There are scenarios where you can have a floating rate, so the interest rate that you pay on the mortgage floats from time to time depending upon economic conditions. There are things such as interest-only mortgages or ARMs, which you may want to use in specific scenarios. It really depends on the situation that you are trying to purchase the home in or use the mortgage for. The most common form of a mortgage is the 30-year, and while some of those other types of mortgages may be applicable to you, I'd probably say 80% of the time it's a 30-year fixed.
Yeah, it's definitely very specific situations, but you're really looking for whatever matches your situation. But the biggest part that matters for all of those is the interest rate. So depending on what the interest rate is, you're either going to have to pay more or less to the bank. And that's really what you're going to be focusing on. So we obviously all want to pay less. So the lower the interest rate, the less we're actually going to have to pay the bank.
Yeah, and the interest rate you pay depends on a lot of things. Your credit score is a big factor, and actually the last topic that we're going to go over. But other things also matter, including how much of a down payment you make. 20% is usually a good guideline for that. The amount of the loan versus total home value, mortgage value versus your income level, whether you're paying PMI or not, maybe where the house is specifically located. There's lots of things that go into that, but nonetheless, interest rate is a big factor.
Yeah, so hopefully some of those are common knowledge to some of you out there. But the one area that I thought wasn't probably as common is how the mortgage actually works. So if we go back to the conventional 30-year fixed rate mortgage, the idea there is that you're going to make the same monthly payment for 30 years. And part of that payment will pay interest to the bank based upon the interest rate. And part of that will go to pay down principal of the actual house. And I don't think that's something a lot of people truly understand, because in the beginning, a lot of your payments are going to interest, meaning you're going to see your balance on your principal of your house go down, but in the beginning, it's going to go down very slowly.
Yeah, an example, a $400K loan, 4% interest, monthly payment is around $1,900. Of that, only 30% of your first payment, or about $575, goes to principal, the rest to the bank.
Yeah, so that's the part that I don't think a lot of people truly understand, that early on, almost everything you're paying is just going into the bank's pocket, and that principal is going down very, very slowly, and that changes over time. So based upon that example, it'll actually take until year 12, where half of your payment's going to interest, half is going to principal, and over the entire 30 years, you end up paying about $287,000 in interest. So much, much different than maybe you originally think, if you just hear 4% of $400,000. But it does change over time, and it is potentially something that you don't know starting off.
Yikes, that sounds absolutely terrible, paying that much interest. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of benefits to owning a home. You can accelerate your payments if you're doing really well financially, so you can kind of reduce that burden somewhat. But also, the home is likely to appreciate in value over time, which is a positive. Your income is likely to increase over time. So while the point Shane made regarding interest initially is valid, don't let that deter you. It's common that everyone goes under that circumstance, and the 30-year mortgage is what allows you to buy the home initially without having to save it all at once.
Yeah, so just more so understanding what you're getting into and how it does actually work. So moving on, lastly, to credit scores. So by no means is this an advertisement that you see on TV to check this, to do that, but credit scores is one of those things that doesn't seem like it is important until you need it, and then it becomes very important. When you go to get a mortgage, your credit score is going to greatly differ based upon what interest rate you're charged. So better credit score, you're going to pay a lower rate. So definitely something you want to pay attention to. I know every time I rent an apartment, they request my credit score. So you don't want to have that dream apartment taken away from you just because you didn't get your credit in line. So when we look at credit scores, there's really five main areas that make up what your score is. So the first and the largest is your payment history. So this is looking at things like credit cards or mortgages or whatever the case would be, and looks to see if you've made your payments on time. If you always pay off your credit card, that's going to help your credit score. Oddly enough, my first credit card that I got in high school, I actually missed my first two payments.
Shane.
It wasn't actually my fault. I blame other people, but I got it fixed in time, so it didn't actually hurt me. But even if you do make mistakes like that, or maybe when you're in high school, mostly this only stays on your report for about 7 years. So there is getting past it, but they will also look into how much that payment was. So if I missed a $1,000 payment versus a $50,000 payment, they're going to look at it differently. If I missed by one day versus 1 year, it's going to be different. So a lot of things go into it. Other things you can see in the payment history would be things like bankruptcy, or if you have an outstanding bill and a collection agency has it. Also things that will really hurt your credit score.
Yeah, next, 30% of your credit score is the amount owed. And there's some things that go into this, such as the amount owed versus your limit. But this takes into consideration any mortgage, auto, credit card, student loan debt that you may have. The more you owe, in theory, the lower your score. But that brings up the next point, which is around 15% of your credit score goes to the length of your credit history. And the longer your credit history, the more consistently you have made payments, the more consistently you have dwindled down your debt, the higher your score is likely to be. So just because you have a lot of debt doesn't mean you have a bad credit rating. If you have a great standing, it could actually be a benefit to you. But nonetheless, the amount owed and the length of your credit history are both factors.
Great. So two last ones, and these are smaller amounts, only 10% each, but one of those is new credit. So they'll look at how much credit you have. If you've taken out a whole bunch of credit recently, that's most likely going to hurt you because you don't have that history of being able to use credit well. So maybe slowly adding your credit lines makes more sense. And then Joe talked about some of these, but types of credit used. So credit cards, auto loans, mortgages, student loans. The more you have, it's actually better if you're actually paying them off, because it shows you're more responsible in different areas, but also not just an idea to go out get a mortgage because you want to increase your credit score. But all in all, a lot of different ways to help keep that credit score good or improve it.
Yeah, and one other thing to consider is hard inquiries, which are going to hurt your credit score. And hard inquiries occur when you are out there looking for credit or looking to borrow money to purchase something or to do something, such as go to school, whatever the case may be. But nonetheless, hard inquiries are going to be detrimental anytime you apply for them, so a house, car, mortgage, etc. Those are different, though, from a soft inquiry. So if one of us goes out and checks our credit score, or your employer checks your credit score, those aren't going to be considered a hard inquiry. They're a soft inquiry, and those aren't negative towards your credit score.
Yeah. So we keep talking about these credit scores. Usually it's referred to as a FICO score, is the actual number. Your scores can range from about 300 to 850. Anything in kind of the mid-600s is like around average. When you're into the mid-700s and up, that's a pretty good credit score and really helps, like I said, with mortgage rates. Can really push down a mortgage rate if you have really good credit. But your score definitely matters. You can get your score in a lot of different areas, back to kind of some of the commercials you see. But I know my bank offers free credit scores. You can get free credit reports to make sure it's all reported correctly, but probably something to look into maybe once a year, twice a year, whatever the case, to make sure everything in line. So just to recap today's topics, I know we all have those moments where we pretend to know stuff and don't. So give you a couple of ideas on some areas that maybe you can not just nod along to, but actually understand. Talked about mortgages, very, very commonly used, just providing a little bit more detail into how they actually work. And then lastly, credit scores, which, like I said, may not seem like they matter until you actually need to use it, but definitely something you want to keep an eye on. So we hope you enjoyed this episode of Relatable Finance. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at podcast@provwealth.com or check us out on Twitter @financepodcast.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Provenance Wealth Advisors and Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. There is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision and does not constitute a recommendation. Investment involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Future investment performance cannot be guaranteed, and investment yields will fluctuate with market conditions. Any examples given in the podcast are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary.